Today's scripture can be found in James on page 1883 in your pew Bible. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. Submit yourself, then, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come near to God, and he will come near to you.
May the Lord bless this reading of his word to our hearts and minds. There are a couple of subjects that come up in this morning's reading. The first is the two different kinds of wisdom. James would have grown up with this concept from early on in his life. Scriptures contain the word wisdom or wise many times. How might he have understood it? Ancient Hebrew was a pictographic language where symbols were used to convey concepts. Those symbols were combined together to create new concepts. For example, the Hebrew word ham appears as het mem in its original pictographic script. The first letter on the right is the het, which is the picture of a wall or a fence which separates one thing from another. The second letter is mem, a picture of water, which can be chaotic. Think in terms of what we have now with Florence having come to North Carolina. We have water as a life-giving, and then we also have water as a destructive power. It's entirely of this earth. Combined, these two letters literally mean separating water. And that's the word for heat. So that word heat comes from the two letters that mean separate water. If you translated it literally, separating water wouldn't necessarily mean heat. But if you put heat to water in a pot, pretty soon the pot and the water are going to be separated. The water will no longer be there. The pot will be empty. What does all this have to do with wisdom? The pictographic symbols that create the Hebrew word chachma that means wisdom. Never mind. It's related also to the idea of separating, meaning one who is able to separate good from bad. In the first letter, you have the separating, the fence, the separator, that word, that's the het. And then in the middle, we have the one that's the two hands, that's the kaf. And the two hands, imagine if I were to come to you to anoint you, I would place my hands on your head, or I might take the oil from one hand and make a sign on your forehead. It's the sign for anointing. And that would be only done if we were going to consecrate or make something of God. So that's the two hands, and that's the concept behind it, as it has to do with of God. And then again, we have the water, the chaos, things of man. So as you see, we separate the things of God from the things of man, just in the definition of the word wise. Then if we're going to go to the word wisdom, we add a symbol. Remember, you read separating God, man, and then behold, the symbol on the very left. It's a hey, I believe is what it's called. It says, hey, behold, it has been shown. So if wisdom, if wiseness has been shown, that's wisdom. And that's the way it would have been understood by James. That one word can be translated either as skill, if you're referring to a craftsman or a single person, or if you were a leader, it would be translated as the word wisdom. In ancient Hebrew, there's this the concept of things of man versus things of God, or good versus evil. It's not the same binary concept that we have in the Western world. It's more a recognition that there's a scale between these things, that there's a balance. You can't know good if you don't know bad. You can't know joy if you don't know pain. So the concepts that we have in the Western world, it's a little harder for us to understand that this is more of a scale, more of a moving across from one side to the other side and achieving a balance between the two. In our world, it's a bit more dichotomous. It's either this or it's that. So it's a little tougher for us to kind of quite get exactly what the word wisdom would have meant to them, but it's more of a gradient, more of a stretching across things from separating the things of man and the things of God. When we come to our world, we have dictionary.com, and the definition of the word wisdom is a quality or state of being wise, knowledge of what is true or right, coupled with judgment in action, discernment or insight. So what's this word wise? Wise means having the power of discerning or judging properly as to what is true or right, possessing discernment, judgment, or discretion. Wisdom isn't simply intelligence or knowledge or even understanding. It is the ability to use these to think and act in a way that common sense prevails. And choices become beneficial or productive when wisdom is employed. You don't get wisdom out of a textbook. You don't get knowledge just to make you wise. You don't receive understanding simply from hearing others. Experience might be one of the more beneficial teachers. We learn from experience, and it gives us the wisdom of whether to make a certain choice or not. For example, you could hear lectures on the subject of swimming. You can read books about swimming. You could throw a cork on water and watch it float. You could even see a body in water floating. But none of that is going to give you the same understanding and wisdom about the subject of swimming until you jump in the water and try it yourself. Then you feel the resistance of the water, you feel the buoyancy of the water, and you actually come to a wisdom or an understanding of what swimming is all about. So that experience becomes one of the better teachers. The book of James has been called a New Testament book of wisdom because it contains wisdom for the church. The Old Testament books of wisdom are generally considered to be Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job. James saw the value of wisdom when he writes, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him." That's from the first chapter of this letter that he wrote. When Solomon became king of Israel, he could have asked God for anything. What did he ask for? He didn't ask for a long life or wealth for himself. He asked for wisdom. And God answered that prayer and said to him, "Since you have asked for this and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but you've asked for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be." Later in Luke, we read about Solomon. His wisdom grew so greatly that almost all that heard of him came to seek his wisdom and came from all ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. James understood this. He understood that it is a good thing to pray for and ask God for wisdom. In this morning's reading, it opens with James asking a rhetorical question. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in humility. That comes from wisdom. But he notes further that there is a difference between earthly wisdom and godly wisdom as he continues. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but it is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. James was steeped in the Old Testament, and the Hebrew word for wisdom has that nuance of skill. True wisdom is based on knowledge, but it is so much more than knowledge. It is that ability to live in a manner pleasing to God because you understand His truth, and you live in constant submission to His Spirit, applying that truth to all of life. So what does he mean with godly wisdom is first of all pure? Without purity, it's not wisdom from above. The Greek word that we translate as pure means unalloyed, unmixed, or untainted. It may point to moral purity, but in the context here, it especially has the sense of being free from jealousy and selfish ambitions. In other words, it is focusing on our motives. If we seek wisdom so that we can lord it over others or use it for our own advantage or power, it is not pure godly wisdom. Our motive for seeking wisdom or for using wisdom must always be to glorify God and to build up the person with whom we are speaking. It must be Solomon-esque. Then he says, godly wisdom is then peace-loving. It's first and foremost pure. Then next is peace-loving. In other words, godly wisdom seeks to share truth in open hearts and minds to God's presence and love, but doing so in a manner that is more like a bull in a china shop means that the message that one wants to deliver just gets lost under the method. In our current political climate, it's really tempting. My truths are better than your truths, and yours are just, well, fill in the blank, whatever bad word you want to fill in the blank with. Your truths are just, eh. And when you try it that way, that's really effective. It just gets the message across so well. And that was sarcastic. So, no wisdom gets imparted because there's no peace to aid in the absorption of the wisdom that's being imparted. Next, godly wisdom is considerate. When you truly understand what godly wisdom is, and in our lifetimes, we're not going to get there to understanding it completely and fully. After all, we're human. But well, as we get it, as we understand it, as we move along, in James' passage it says today, it will show in the deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. I had an example of this that I thought of as I was studying and doing this. It was the Women's March on January 21st, 2017. I was at the one in San Francisco. The speeches and the actions there were not just to bash the newly inaugurated administration. That wasn't what we were there for. But it was rather to lift each other up in support of as women together, emotionally and spiritually and physically. We were going to be running into trouble, as far as we could tell, coming up in the years to come. But that wasn't the focus, and that wasn't the point. The point was that we were there to walk with each other through these times, to lift each other up, to be considerate and supportive of each other, to be focusing on the good things we could get done, the things that we could do together. We learned and gained hope at that rally. The tone of the march was lifted even as the rain came down on us, because we were there for each other, being considerate, not for our own purposes, not just ranting and raving, but gaining a wisdom that would carry us through. This next point, godly wisdom is submissive. Let me start with, I hate that word. Completely and utterly hate that word. I'm a 66-year-old white female. I have 2 strikes against me in that one sentence. My age and my sex, my gender. The fact that I'm white is a plus. And those things, when you get raised the way I did, my father taught me before I left to go to college how to fix my bicycle so that I could take it apart, strip it down, and put it all back together. I went to Davis, so you had to have a bicycle. And it was largely so that I would be able to stand on my own and not be submissive to anyone for any reason. So there was a blessing in the fact that I was able to learn to stand on my own. It was a curse in that I learned to stand on my own. So the thought or the idea growing up in the pre-Me Too movement and what submission might mean or might look like, it was not a pretty picture being a female in the early 70s in college. It just wasn't. And we have an example of just the difference in what is expected between men and women that's going on in our society right now. You know, boys will do those things, boys will be boys, but the girls, what were you wearing? Why did you let it get so far before you said no? It's a whole different dichotomy thing. So the word submissive has all kinds of connotations to me personally and to a large number of people. It's not something to do. It's not something to want to do. And then we get told, godly wisdom is submissive. Okay, so how's this going to work? But then you stop and you look at the times when you actually let go and let God. When you put him in the driver's seat of your life and let him run things and just gave yourself to him. Suddenly it's a whole different picture. Being submissive is joyful. Being submissive is amazingly, powerfully wonderful. The things that you can get done are so much greater than just yourself when you let go and let God. And I don't know about you, but I tend to want to grab that control back. It's mine. Thank you very much, Lord. You did good. It's my turn. And I want to grab it back. And I'm sure I am not the only person in this room who wants to grab that control back and take it over for myself. The world has a whole bunch of self-help gurus out there that will teach us in books how to do this all on our own. How we can be in control of our lives. And so that's what we learn in our society. But then when we learn to let go, wow, that's pretty amazing. So take a second, recall a time when God was in the driver's seat of your life, fully and unreservedly. What was that like? And then we hit the human nature thing and worked out to grab control back again. It never works out the way you and I think or hope. Yet, we grab the reins back. We try to grab the reins back. And that's not very wise. Godly wisdom is also, the next point is, godly wisdom is full of mercy and good fruit. The more we know, the more we are able to discern. The better we are at discernment, the less knee-jerk our reactions become to people and circumstances. Prejudices would be the opposite of the merciful, godly wisdom. The wiser we become, the easier it is to practice mercy. I've led 2 discussion groups, study groups now, on the subject of racial biases and prejudices. The result of the increased knowledge and data about how the systems came into being that helped put these attitudes and ingrain these prejudices into our lives has really helped people to shake them off, to become more merciful, to be able to reach out and have good fruit in their relationships with others. And then following on that is that godly wisdom is impartial and sincere. The more you know, the more you're able to shed the partiality that comes from prejudices and biases, and you gain knowledge and data about different cultures and experiences, and then it becomes something where you don't hold on to just your own. You can understand. It's like that thing where you see somebody on the street and they have a nasty day. And I could think of a time standing in line at a grocery store, and the woman behind me was just having a really tough time, and she mentioned something like, "Could you hurry it up?" And my first response was to kind of turn around, and then I thought, no. And right there next to the counter were two boxes of animal crackers. I grabbed them, I put them on the counter, and I said, "These are for the lady behind me," and I bought the two packages of animal crackers. I was hoping she wasn't going to be one of those people that wouldn't let her kids have animal crackers. It's just that difference in, she might be having a bad day. And who am I to contribute to it? Why don't I do something that makes it better? So if there are evidences in your life of things being trials, tribulations, it's probably that we need to work on becoming more wise in any one of those points, submitting to God, letting Him take over, letting Him take control. At this church, we demonstrate to each other that we like each other, that we get along. We take care of each other, and this body, this whole body as a unit, reaching out into our community as a whole. And we are becoming more better known as a community hub, a place for peace. We need to remember these words that come to us from James back in 62 AD and do our best to live them every day. We'll only do it with God's presence in our lives.